Hey, listeners, before we get to this episode of Problem Solvers, here is a word from our sponsor.
Coming up with a name for your business can be difficult. Finding a matching domain can be even harder. Don't settle for a website name that's kind of close. Show strength and brand continuity with a domain name that is the exact match to your business name. .inc, and that's inc as in I-N-C, .inc offers premium, instantly credible domains built for businesses of all sizes. Startups everywhere are switching to the domain ending that means business. From reset.inc to self.inc, a .inc domain will help put your brand alongside Fortune 500 companies like Facebook, PayPal, and Amazon. .inc is the domain that means business for your business. Establish your online presence by registering your .inc domain today. Visit entrepreneur.inc to learn more. Again, that is entrepreneur.inc.
And now, on with the show. From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
Aaron Ain has worked for the company Kronos for 42 years. It's the only place he's ever worked as an adult, and he's been CEO for 15 years. And one day, he gets approached about being the CEO of Kronos and Ultimate Software. Now, Ultimate Software is a competitor to Kronos. Both of them make workforce management and human capital management cloud services. And the idea here was merge these two companies, and Aaron will lead the way and then be the leader for it all, which, you know, pretty exciting.
And after a couple months of investigating, I say, okay, makes sense. Let's do it.
So they start moving on it. Big, exciting plans, ambitious merger of two leaders in a space. Aaron going to be sitting at the top. This is a lot of work. It's a big challenge. It's super exciting. There's a lot to juggle. And they set a date for it all to happen.
February 20th is the big day when we decide we're going to announce to the world we're going to do this merger. We kept it very quiet. And I go down to Ultimate's world headquarters where nobody knows who I am, really, except for the few people who are in the tent.
All right, let me just pause here to make sure that you caught that date that Aaron said. He said February 20th. The year of that February 20th is 2020. February 20th, 2020, which means, of course, now you know something that Aaron back in February did not know, which was that a pandemic was about to come and make the thing that he's about to do so much harder. But of course, he didn't know that at the time.
And I stand up both directly and on video to over 6,000 Ultimate people around the world and introduce myself as their new CEO, replacing a founder CEO who had been there for close to 30 years and was beloved, but had a good attitude about it. But everyone was a little bit nervous. I was a little bit nervous. They were a little bit nervous, but up for the task.
Hearing this, knowing what's about to happen, doesn't it make it feel like when you watch a horror movie and you know that character, when they walk into that log cabin, oh, don't walk into the log cabin. Oh, it's going to be bad. Could you imagine? Here you are. You're the CEO overseeing this merger of two competitors. You got to walk in. You're replacing the founder that everybody knew. These people have no idea who you are. They don't know if they can trust you. They don't know if their jobs are safe. They don't know anything. You, as the leader, are going to have to figure all that out. You're going to have to be a great leader, which is hard enough. And then a pandemic is about to come. A pandemic is about to come.
And the next day, flew back to Massachusetts and did the same presentation in front of 6,400 Kronos people. And we announced that we were going to do a merger like no other. And we would close around April 1st. And so then we started working in a real public way. And then the pandemic started getting a little bit louder and a little bit louder and a little bit louder. Until March 13th, we closed everything down and sent everybody home. And we still announced it on April 1st. So those weeks between February 20th and April 1st. I'm not sure I would have agreed to do it again, but it was too late at that point because we had already announced it and I was all in.
So what do you do? What do you do when you're overseeing a merger not just of competitors, but also of cultures? Because these companies, they worked in totally different ways. And here you are trying to get everybody to be in sync, in harmony. And now you have to do it while everybody is worried about their livelihoods and their lives. And also, you're not able to go to the office. And frankly, this just sounds like a disaster. But Aaron, well, he didn't make it a disaster. I mean, it was a lot of hard work. As you'll hear him say later, it's about the hardest thing he's ever done. And he still has plenty of things that he's struggling with. But he got through it. He's getting through it. These companies, they are merged. They even have a new name. It's UKG. So on this episode of Problem Solvers, I am going to walk through with Aaron how exactly he ran a giant merger in the middle of a pandemic. It is about the hardest thing you can do in normal times. And now, whew, even more so. But there is so much to learn about great management and understanding cultures and just getting through it. So, Aaron and the big merger in the middle of a pandemic. That's what we're talking about, and it's all coming up after the break. When you're running a business, HR can become a source of constant problems. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations. And sure, you could hire an HR manager to handle all that, but they have an average salary of 70 grand. So what's the solution to all this? It's Bambee, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, which was created specifically for small businesses and turns HR from a major liability into a major strength. When you sign up with Bambee, you get a dedicated HR manager who's available by phone, email, or real-time chat, as well as a crafted HR policy, and you can maintain your compliance. And best yet, you get it all for just $99 a month. Your Bambee subscription is month-to-month with no hidden fees, and you can cancel any time. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend time on HR compliance, so let someone else do it. Contact Bambee to get your free HR audit today. Just go to Bambee.com/solve right now to schedule your free HR audit. Again, that's Bambee.com/solve, spelled BAM to the BEE.com/solve. All right, we're back. So when I was talking to Aaron about getting into this process, I mean, starting this merger and then a pandemic coming along, he said this really interesting and surprising thing.
The easy part was February 20th to April 1st. The hard part has been every day since then.
Well, that's interesting because February 20th to April 1st constitutes the part in which everybody is sent home and there is the first wave of a panic that lasts months in everybody's minds about, doesn't matter where you work, will my company survive? Will the world be the way that it was before? Do I even have a place in this world? And I imagine you had all sorts of plans about how to merge these two companies, not just operationally, but also culturally. And every day during that period of time, you must have said, well, no, that's not going to work anymore. Or, well, we can't do that anymore. What was going through your head?
First thing that was going through my head was our plans to have this be a growth story was put on hold. We publicly communicated that we were going to add 3,000 people over 5 years. And it wasn't about merging the companies around cost synergies. It was about delivering a higher form of everything we did, including our culture. And that got put on hold at that point. And then the first thing through my mind was how nervous everyone must be. First thing through my mind was how was I going to protect all the people who work at the company, the 12,400 people. The first thing through my mind was we couldn't lay anybody off. We couldn't send them out and to have to go find jobs in what at that point seemed like an incredibly impossible, scary situation. So that was my first set of thoughts was how do I protect all 12,400 people? How do I protect the families of the 12,400 people? How do I make sure we don't reduce headcount? How do I make sure we don't cut pay? How do I make sure we don't cut benefits? That's what was on my mind.
Well, those are all really interesting questions. How do you, I mean, I'm sure that the answer to it could take hours and hours, but what were the things that you were starting to look at during those very uncertain times to ensure that?
Well, look, so it's a really fair question. So I sat down with my leadership team and said, the first thing we need to make sure we do is that we have the resources that our balance sheet can support that objective. And so we built a stress case, the stress model of what we thought our income statement would look like, our P&L, and how it was going to impact our cash position. And we built a pretty dire situation of our product sales declining 43% and existing customers saying, I can't pay you anymore. And we said, okay, what do we have to stop spending money on that's not directly connected to people keeping their jobs and keeping their pay? And we put all that into high gear as fast as we could. And then we became satisfied. I became satisfied with that stress case. We still had a balance sheet that could protect the people the way I was committed to doing that. That's the first thing we did. And once we did that, I then started communicating every week on video, a video vlog, 7-8 minutes of full transparency, telling them I was worried. I know you're worried, I'm worried. I know you're scared, I'm scared. But here's our plan, and here's what I'm committed to. And I need your help to help me do this. And I need us to all pull together. And that's what I did.
Did you have that kind of regular, transparent communication with your team before this, or were you adopting a kind of new way of communicating for a new time?
Well, for the legacy Kronos people, those 6,400 people, yes, I communicated actively with them. Not every week, because I didn't need to communicate every week that way, but once a month or so, yeah, I did a vlog, a video blog, and was very active. But to the new Ultimate Software people, who I was now their CEO, no, I had never done that. They didn't know me. They didn't trust me. Why would they trust me? You know, they didn't not trust me, but you earn people's trust. You can't demand they just trust you. So no, for though that group, they had never seen me do that.
All right. That must have been a real emotional challenge, I'm going to guess or ask, because here you were, you admitted a few minutes ago, you said the first time you stepped in front of them to announce this merger, you're feeling a little nervous. They're all nervous. They don't know you. You don't know them. But here you are to say, I'm the leader. Trust in me. We're going to do great things. But now, boy, you're not just a new leader that they don't know, but you are a leader during a time in which nobody can predict anything. It must have been challenging.
It still is. Incredibly challenging. Yeah. And I tried to think about on a regular basis, and I still do, Jason, if I were them, how would I be thinking about me? Okay. So, and it's not because I was trying to get into their head. I was just thinking, like, how do I want to communicate? How would I want to be communicated to? So I've always been very comfortable about being direct and open and transparent. I believe always telling the truth, always telling the truth. To tell the truth, everything becomes easier. And so I just followed my instinct and my style and my method, and that have worked for me, be genuine to myself. And I think over as each week went by, as each month went by, and they saw we were doing what I said we were going to try to do, I gained their trust a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And I'm still earning their trust because most of them I've never met. I lost that opportunity with this. And so it's all through Zoom things. Look, I've gotten thousands of emails and texts and notes through LinkedIn or others, and I've responded to every single one of them individually, every single one of them, in an effort to be respectful, in an effort to gain trust, in an effort to just do the right thing because we're all nervous about this.
Was that happening organically, or were you inviting people? You saying, hey, contact me however you can and I'll get back to you.
Yes and yes. Some people don't need an invitation. Others, I told people, look, I read my own emails. I respond to my own phone calls. And so if you have something to say, happy to hear from you. So some people did it for that reason. Others did it because they want to do that. And so some I've heard from a lot.
Did you have to merge cultures in any way? Were there different ways of operating per company? And now you've got teams who had never worked together who are now trying to figure that out and they're unable to connect outside of Zoom. How are you managing that?
Okay, that's a fantastic question. Really thoughtful question. Thanks. Look, the great places to work for all organization and Fortune magazine every year for the past 23 years have run a body of work which rates the top 100 places to work. And never in their 23-year history have two companies in the top 100 merged until this year. And so two companies, Ultimate Software number 2 and Kronos number 52, merged. So you might say, well, they both have great cultures. Easy schmeasy. Wrong. They both have great cultures, but the cultures are very different. And the one thing I learned is you can have great companies with great cultures and they can do it much differently.
Well, somebody once wrote in a piece about culture for us that there are no right and wrong cultures. There's only a culture that works or a culture that doesn't. Can you describe the differences between the two? The differences between the two companies.
Ultimate was a very decentralized culture where functional groups made their own decisions and just about every type of area you can imagine, hiring, compensation, procurement, systems, where Kronos is a culture where it's more centralized. And so now you try to have a place that's deeply centralized with a place that's more decentralized. There's one example, not the only example, but an example, but many others as well. And so trying to bring those together, challenge. And then not even so much just around the culture. When we're merging organizations, I hate to say it this way, but it kind of is this way. There were people who were winners and people who were losers. You don't need two of everything.
Sure.
And so people get nervous. So we've worked really hard to keep everybody and find spots for them. But when you're going through that evaluation, the people don't know that. And so you have to try to make good decisions as quickly as you can to go and ease people's state of mind. And that's still going on. And by the way, what we might have been able to do in 3 months in some of those areas because of COVID has probably taken 6 months because we're not together.
Yeah, because these people now also can't get the just sort of day-to-day feedback, get a sense of where they fit into a new world if they're basically just alone at home with a Zoom screen as a lifeline.
Right. Can you imagine the new person who's going to make this decision between two of these? One is known to one person, the other isn't. The one who's new to it is saying, I have to convince this person who I can't be with that I'm the right person to be the winner in that. I mean, oh my goodness. So I work every day to wrap my arms around all those people and tell them, I get that. Trust us, we'll figure it out.
We're going to take a short break from this conversation, but when we return, we're going to keep talking about culture and so much more about how to lead through crisis. And we're going to kick off when we come back with this unexpected defining moment, something that Aaron really didn't think was going to be a huge deal, but it really was. Okay, right after the break. If I have learned anything from talking to people for a podcast called Problem Solvers, it is that the human spirit has the power to overcome adversity. And that is what the Hartford believes too. With the right team, resources, and technology in place, they know that people are capable of amazing things. And in a world where employee needs are quickly evolving, it's more important than ever to have a partner who stands behind you as you look to make decisions that ensure you are providing the right support for your workforce. The Hartford is an insurance company, but it is more than that too. It is dedicated to helping you succeed Their experienced teams will take the time to get to fully understand your company and help to design a benefits package that provides the best experiences possible for your employees. To learn more about how The Hartford can have your back as you solve today's problems and tomorrow's, then visit thehartford.com/futureofbenefits. Again, that is thehartford.com/futureofbenefits. The Hartford is the Hartford Financial Services Group, Inc., and its subsidiaries, including underwriting companies Hartford Life and Accident Insurance Company and Hartford Fire Insurance Company. Home office is in Hartford, Connecticut. All right, we're back. So we're going to get back into the conversation in which Aaron had been talking about merging these two companies and merging their cultures. And I said just before the break that there was a really surprising, defining moment.
You know what defining moment with this is? When we announced on August 28th our new name, people stopped being Cronites and stopped being Ulti peeps, and they started being people who work for UKG. I didn't realize for a highly cultured place how important it was this new name, this new sense of belonging, this new home.
Yeah.
Now I don't know when people send me notes if they're an Ultimate person or a Kronos person anymore.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't know, because it doesn't say anymore. Now they're a UKG person.
And they probably like that as well, because it gives them...
Put together, yeah. If you go on and read all the social media posts, it's fantastic how people have responded to it. You would think that we pick the best branded process and the best name ever created in the history of the world, because people have rallied around it so much.
I've heard this from a number of other leaders. The one that springs to mind is the head of Verizon, I guess I forget the Verizon Media Group or something like that. It's the part of Verizon that owns the Huffington Post and a number of other media brands. But for a while, they had some ridiculous name that was so ridiculous that I don't remember it, but the word Verizon wasn't in it. It was something completely different. Oh, hi. I'm just going to interrupt myself to say the name was Oath. I couldn't remember it at the time, but Oath. And then Oath became Verizon Media Group. I actually did a podcast episode about this maybe a year ago.
And when he came on board, one of the first things he said was, we got to get rid of this name, in part because he was seeing that people were unsure of whether the parent company cared about them. Yeah. Because they didn't have the word Verizon in the name. So symbolic as it may be, it actually really does matter. But I'm curious what other things you had done in the intervening months to, for example, get a centralized culture and a decentralized culture to work together. What does that actually look like?
So we started centralizing because I believed it was the only way we could run now a 12,400 employee company going to an 18,000 employee company. So that meant we moved procurement from decentralized, where each functional group would buy things on their own, to a centralized one and get the same product and services we did before, but maybe get it at better prices, better service, and told people we were going to do that. And there's an example. And we moved to a common compensation plan so that two people who had the same job but worked in different functions were now paid the same or the same range in the same system, because I believe pay equity is critical. So as we did it and explained that, I think on one hand, people understood it. And quite frankly, I found that people were looking for it where it was decentralized. And so we just started kicking that into gear and doing the things that made sense. And we still have another year of hard work to do with this. Yeah. Now, I'm doing another one tomorrow for 1,200 employees of the new company of UKG, where I'm the keynote speaker, and a women in leadership program. I'm going to talk about my experiences with the women in my life who have made a difference, and what I think about leadership and why I think it's important. So I've been doing town halls with small groups and large groups as often as I can, or as often as people ask me, which is often, to share my view so they can get to know me as their leader, because it's important. We all want to know who that person is. So that's a form of over communicating. And then I've been giving them reasons to trust me. I've been living up to my word. I said we weren't going to get lay off people because of COVID. We haven't. I said we weren't going to cut their pay. We haven't. I said we weren't going to change their benefits. In fact, we announced last week We enhance the benefits to all of the employees. And so I'm earning their trust. I'm over communicating. I'm being transparent. I'm being honest, and I'm earning their trust by living up to what I said I was going to do. So those are things that I'm doing.
I'm curious, from a very personal daily schedule standpoint, all of this connection that you are having with a very large number of employees, sometimes one-to-one, sometimes in groups. How much of your day do you devote to this? And how are you actually just managing this? Because you have, I'm sure, a lot of other things to do than answer everybody's LinkedIn DMs, but you understand the importance of doing it on a one-to-one. But how are you actually managing it?
It's been hard. I'm going to be honest. It's been hard. And my day started 7:30, and like tonight, they finish at 6:30. And maybe I have a 15-minute window here and a 15-minute window there, because I'm dealing with customers and new customers and employees and strategy and integration and operation. And it's hard. And if I have to be completely open about it, it's not that joyful right now. I always work because it brings me unbelievable joy. Oh gosh, so much joy to help people and see us make a difference in the lives of our employees and their families and our customers and build something that makes a difference. But it's not joyful right now. I'd be fibbing if I would say that. So I want to get back to the office. I want to get back with all the people. I want to give people hugs and high fives and handshakes, and I want to do that. I want to go for walks with them. And I wake up every morning thinking about, what am I going to do today to protect the people who work here? I go to bed every night saying to myself, how did I do? How did we do in terms of that objective, that mission? So that gives me the energy to do what I'm doing, because people are scared and they look to leaders, their leaders, to help them get through this. And I understand that.
Well, that's a really great transition into the final thing I was curious about, which is, you were saying what you want to do when you get back to being able to be in the office. As you look at this time, I wonder if you feel like anything has been gained by having to do things differently. And the reason I ask is because I've talked to so many entrepreneurs who have had to adjust, obviously, as everyone has, the way that they do business. And in doing so, they have found opportunities that they wouldn't have otherwise found. They've been forced to think about their companies differently, about the way to do things differently. Something as small and simple, for example, somebody just told me today that they cut way back on their social media marketing, and then discovered that, in fact, they were able to build consumer, I can't remember the term that they use, but whatever, you know, they had their fans go out and
they have a new community,
people who are just customers who are willing to go out and support them. And they wouldn't have even thought to engage those people because they could just pay for the awareness. But now they're able to actually at once engage with their community and save money. And that's not something that they would have thought about during this time. You have had to pull off an extremely complicated task that you are still pulling off under completely different circumstances. And I wonder if you've seen or experienced anything unexpectedly positive about it that you think will inform the way that you manage once everyone's able to be back in the office.
Okay, good question. Fair question. Let me go to the end and work my way back. End of the answer, I don't know. I don't know if what we're doing differently holds the way it is 2 years from now. And I think anyone who says they know, I don't know how they say that with any real confidence. Have we switched all of our big events to virtual? Of course we have. Are they going well? They're going great. But can I say that we're not going to have our user conference in person in the future, and it's all going to be virtual because we pulled this off? I don't know. Do I think that more people will work from home in the future? I do. But can I tell you what percent they are? I can't. I don't think we know yet what the real is. We'll have to go back and see what it's like again. But we're doing all those things you described because we have to. We're doing more than what you described. It's like we created this summer a virtual summer camp for 1,500 children of our employees because camps were canceled, unlike the JCC and Colorado, where, I don't know, maybe people found a camp that could do something there. And it was one of the greatest things we ever did. The feedback, I got videos from children of employees saying, Mr. Rain, I want to tell you, I had the best time at camp this summer, blah, blah, blah. So we figured that out. Now, what have we done? Now we've created a virtual after-school program that we're running because we have parents at home trying to take care of their kids. Will that continue once camps are open again? I don't know. Probably not. But we're doing it now and we're doing it well. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in the future with it. I know I want to go back to my office. I went in a couple weeks ago, Jason, and there was nobody there in the office where my office is 13 floors and about 1,800 people and a couple security people there, a couple facilities. So I went to my office and I felt like rolling around on the carpet for 10 minutes, like I was a dog that got back to their home and just feeling like, I didn't do that, but I felt like it. But you know, at 2 o'clock, I was there all by myself. I said, what am I doing? I felt great being back for the first 3 hours, but not by myself. So I went home and I just kicked it back into gear in my house. So it's too early.
Too early indeed. But you know, the thing is, the company now has a future in which people can be back in the office. And that is all thanks to great leadership of steering a company, two companies that became one company, through an unbelievably challenging time and earning the trust of these people. So that they knew that this company that they were working for, it may be in choppy waters like everyone else, but it has a steady hand at the lead of it, and there's still time. And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feifer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.